is up, ladies and gentlemen? Welcome to episode 239 of the Massive Breakdown Podcast. We have a fantastic episode for you tonight. We're going to be doing a listener Q&A. We were kind of holding off, hoping that maybe we were going to get like a meaty twab on the week before the 30-year anniversary update released. But no, I mean, it wasn't a bad twab, don't get me wrong. There was a good bit of information in it, but not really any of the information that we need to talk about. There was little to no sandbox information. So a bit of a bummer. We are instead going to be answering some of your guys' questions. We've been kind of saving them up in that little document on the Discord, kind of saving them for a rainy day. And I think it's the perfect time to do it. So we also pinged the Discord. We said, put a few more questions in there. We'll try to answer them as best we can. We are going to revisit Cartesian coordinate at the front end of the episode because you would not believe how many people listened all the way to the tail end of last week's episode and did not like my Grave Robber Swashbuckler role for PvE. They were very upset with that. So we're going to do a little bit of a PvE breakdown of Cartesian coordinate. And then we'll get the housekeeping out of the way, or I guess we'll get the housekeeping out of the way first, and then we'll talk about some listener questions. So seems like a pretty fun episode, but I guess let's get the introductions out of the way. How are you doing tonight, Kit?
Doing pretty fantastic. It's that time of year, I think, when we all have a lot going on, trying to juggle the holiday season with just regular life. And trying to find time to relax and realizing that, in fact, you have committed to more things than you realized this time of year is just, you know, it's just like that at times. But I'm getting through it, slowly checking things off the list. And, I played a little bit of Halo for the first time in many, many years, and it was fun.
You played Infinite?
I did.
What'd you think of it?
I liked it. I spent some time going through the tutorial and playing a practice match with bots to get a feel for the game. And it's very different. I had to change my controls to make them almost perfectly match Destiny, although still don't quite perfectly match it, but it's very close. It's interesting. Yeah, just the difference. I'm gonna play some more, and then I'm gonna immediately switch and play Destiny PvP. And I just want to see what that experience is like.
I will tell you, Destiny is a lot easier after having played Halo. The amount of tracking that you have to do in Halo to get a kill is so much more than what you have to do in Destiny. The Destiny feels very easy by comparison. What doesn't feel easy is like all the ridiculous movement and like ability stuff in Destiny. But the gun skill itself, I feel like Halo is like a great trainer. Like if you can be good at Halo shooting, you can be very good at Destiny shooting. And funny story, like I played a good bit of Infinite. Like I played a lot of Infinite and I played the ranked, and it took me a while to figure out what the ranked was about, and I realized it's a shitty, shitty system. It is literally almost an exact duplicate of like the awful ass glory system that we have in Destiny, where like it's an attrition system where you hardly lose any points at all for losing, and you gain points for winning. So it matches you based on this awful lobby balancing system, and basically losses like don't matter at all, and as long as you win, you'll like eventually progress upwards, which was like really, really horrendously disappointing for me because I'm used to the Halo ranking systems of years past, which were in my opinion like the pinnacle of FPS ranking systems. And so that like killed a little bit of my drive to play, and then I was like, you know what, I wonder if I'm just being nostalgic. So I went back and I downloaded the Master Chief Collection. I got an Xbox Series X. I was very lucky. I got Game Pass. So I went and downloaded the Master Chief Collection. I played some Reach and I played some Halo 3. And I was like, holy shit, these games are fun. Like the movement is very, very lethargic. It feels like you're walking through molasses all the time. But if you can get over the movement, the actual gameplay, like the map design, the weapon design, even the ability design stuff is really, really good. So I started playing some of that again. And I got a buddy who I used to play Halo 3 with. He was up in town for a little bit. And we played some split screen at my house. Like I haven't played split screen in a video game and I don't know how long. He literally messaged me today. He was like, I bought an Xbox in Game Pass. He's like, but Halo Master Chief Collection is like 100 gigs. It's taking forever to download, but I'll be on this weekend. Randomly, both of my brothers who were at the house watching also bought Master Chief Collection. And so my brothers bought the Master Chief Collection and they bought an Xbox too. So I managed to convince my brothers and a buddy of mine to buy a new Xbox and get the Master Chief Collection. So I think over this holiday break, I'm going to be playing a good bit of the old school. I'm going to play some Halo 3. I'm going to play some Halo Reach, and I'm really looking forward to it.
Nice. That's awesome. Yeah, I never played a lot of Halo 3. I was a little before that in time, but
Halo 3 is great, man.
It definitely, playing Infinite has made me nostalgic for sure. And it's kind of fun because it feels familiar and yet different. So
you can see the DNA of like Bungie's type of shooters baked into it, even though 343 has like changed a lot. You can see it kind of baked in there, but yeah, when you go back to 3 and Reach, like the gunplay is so, so much better than what 343 has been able to do. Like, and this is the big problem. People are like, oh my God, like Infinite feels like shit on controller until you like really, really tweak the settings. When you go back to play Halo 3 and Halo Reach, like they feel buttery smooth right out of the gate. It feels so good to use those weapons. And, you know, Bloom and Halo Reach notwithstanding. And then it you go back to Halo Infinite and it kind of was like, I was like, ugh. I don't know. So I'm definitely gonna play Infinite's campaign, but like I don't know if the multiplayer, I was like really high on it to begin with, and now that I've played some of the old Halos and come back into it, like it's a little bit of a slap in the face, and I'm kind of like I don't know if I'm about it again.
Yeah, no, I moved around a little bit, stopped, and just immediately turned my sensitivity way up across the board, and it's been good so far. I might tweak it a little bit more yet.
You should fuck with the dead zones if you can. Mm-hmm. I found that the dead zones were actually like the biggest thing that was like really screwing up everything. They set the dead zones super, super high by default. They're like 12 is the default, which is an absurdly high value. Like I turned them down to 6 for movement and I think 4 for look. And it immediately made a huge difference in terms of the sensitivity of the sticks. So,
I'll have to look at those next. Okay, well, we've talked a whole bunch about Halo, but this is not Halo Massive Breakdowns.
It could be, if we really want to go hard. If we really wanted to throw people for a loop, be like, you know what, it's Destiny's dead season. We're just going to Halo Infinite Massive Breakdowns episode, but no, we won't do that to you guys.
Not this week, at least. We'll see how the 30th anniversary goes. In the meantime, we do have some thank yous and some housekeeping to take care of. So let's go ahead and do that here. I'd like to start, as we often do, by saying thank you to some new Guardians pledging for the first time, joining the Patreon crew. This is a big week. A lot of new people in the Patreon, and it makes a lot of sense because we have some really, really fantastic new art from Irresolute that is featured on stickers and posters. And by popular demand, also now available on shirts in both Crew and V-neck. So,
did you put my design up there, the front and back one, or did you not?
I did not.
You're like,
nah, I did not. No. That's,
I'm gonna have a sweet custom shirt, you guys. That's gonna be different than what you guys have.
Yeah,
I'm gonna have it with the Massive Breakdown logo on the front and the design on the back.
If people start asking me for that, I didn't offer that because it is in part considerably more expensive to do that printing on the front and back. There are actually a lot of custom options I looked at, and I realized that I could make like a $50 shirt if I wanted to, and then I didn't do that. But yeah, so we're trying to make something that's going to be presentable, enjoyable, show off this beautiful art that Irresolute created for us, and also not be insanely expensive. Custom shirts are always a little pricey, especially when it's a small batch like this. These are print on demand, so they're, you know, not quite the same as if we're buying 500 shirts in a lot to sell over a long period of time. These shirts will be available through the end of the year, and
it might be a little bit of wiggle room there, because I'd hate for someone to pledge at like December 30th, and then like the shirts go away within like 2 days. Well, so there might be some wiggle room.
Anyone who pledges before January 1st at $5 or above is guaranteed to get something. And then anyone who pledges at any level is going to get access to the patron store where you can purchase these items at the prices that they are. Full price if you're just pledging a dollar or two. There are some discount codes available at various tiers.
Why don't we go over the whole thing since we're already at this point in time? Like,
yeah, all right.
We said it in the Discord and we said it on Twitter, but I'm sure that there's some people out there who have not heard how the whole thing is going to work. But we have like a whole system set up where, depending on where you pledge, you may get some stuff for free. You may get some stuff discounted. Everybody gets access. Why don't you go over the whole thing from top to bottom? That way everybody's on the same page.
Okay. All right. We're going to break it down. This is going to be a little bit longer time spent in housekeeping than I really wanted to do. But yeah.
I'll put a timestamp in the description. If you hate housekeeping, if you're not a patron, you can skip right ahead. You can blow past all this stuff.
Absolutely.
I promise you a timestamp.
Absolutely. Okay. So, here's how it works. If you pledge at any level, you get access to the patron store. You get a thank you on the episode, et cetera, et cetera. You get the patron role in our Discord, shiny yellow text on your name, which is pretty sweet as well. If you are pledging at $5 per month, we've got currently three options available at that level. You can pick Le Monarch, Bastion, or The Last Word. These are the three pieces created in collaboration with Irresolute. I say in collaboration, but he did all the hard work. We know. You know. So you can pick one of those. You're going to get a beautiful 4x4 sticker. Very high quality printing. Stick it anywhere. You're also going to get a 10% discount code at $5 and up that you can use on anything in the patron store. That's stickers, posters, t-shirts. That stuff is all going to be available with that 10% discount. If you're pledging at $13 and up, what we call the gunsmith level, again, you'll have your choice of those three, Le Monarch, Bastion, The Last Word. However, at this level, you are getting a poster instead of a sticker. These are 12 by 18 posters. Again, printed on quality paper. They're going to look great on your wall. Going to show off the beauty of this art. You're also going to get, at that level, a 20% discount code. Good for any items in the store. If you want to go a little higher, pledge at the $19 month level and have the same choice of those three weapons, but this time you get the poster and the sticker of whichever weapon you choose, and you get a 30% discount code, again good for any items in the patron store. And at the very top we have the nine, and the nine are getting all three posters, all three stickers. They get that same 30% discount code that the $19 per month, the Vanguard level, gets. They get called out as sponsors in every episode. You've been listening to us for a little while. You probably know the drill. Now, in order to get the loot that comes with your pledge level, you must stay pledged at that level, in that tier, for 3 consecutive months. So if you have already pledged, you pledged in November, before December 1st. December 1st is the first pledge period that counts. So it'd be December 1st, January 1st, February 1st, and then early February. Those items that are included in your membership all get printed and shipped. If you pledge this month, December, as long as you pledge before January 1st, we're going to start counting in January. So January, February, and then March, and then early March, those items would get shipped. You just have to stay with us for 3 consecutive months, and you're going to get whatever item it is at whatever level that you have pledged. And I think that about sums it up. That makes sense? Did I leave anything out?
No, that was a pretty straightforward explanation. It is the truth. The store... So basically, if you get something from Patron and you'd like something else, say, for example, you like both the Le Monarch sticker and the Bastion sticker, you can only choose one of those through Patron unless you're a member of the Nine. So the store is a great opportunity to select the other one of those. It's the same style sticker, same size, everything like that. So you basically complete the set through the store is the reason why I put that store up there.
Exactly.
Simultaneously, we know that a lot of you wanted t-shirts. We put a poll out a few months ago, recognized that everyone wanted t-shirts, and then for some reason, I actually don't remember why, we just like went ahead with the poster designs instead of doing the t-shirt designs.
I don't know why we did that.
I think we got so excited about the poster designs and they look so good that we were just like, holy shit, like, these are fucking great. And but it turns out they also make great t-shirt designs, so they'll be on t-shirts as well. I myself will have a special custom t-shirt because I'm bougie, and also because my fiance does not allow me to wear graphic tees with a graphic on the front anymore, so I have no choice. But
it's
great. So yeah, definitely patrons, look out for your rewards in a couple months. But if you want some faster than that, I noticed that some people actually already did. Some people pledged, particularly people who I don't think listen to the podcast at all, but just like really like the art. They pledged at the 2 month level for 1 month, and then they were like, all right, access to the store, sweet, peace. And they like bought a sticker through the store and bounced out. Like, okay, well, yeah, good for you guys. If that's what you want to do, that's what you're welcome to do. But for those of you guys who do support the show long term, we're very happy to have you here. And we hope that these rewards, I think it's the biggest we've ever done for a patron reward thing. I think we started things off pretty well this year with the 100 patron club. And now I'd like to think that we're finishing the year strong with our 2021 patrons club memorabilia.
I think so. Yeah, I'm really, really happy with this. Super happy to be able to put some of this up on my wall. Cause this is also stuff that we like to collect. We spend a lot of time and effort putting this all together and getting this out every week, as you guys know. So it means a lot to have your support, but it also means a lot to get the opportunity to work with talented artists from the community and come away with some awesome collectibles for the time and effort that we put in. So it's nice. You know, I'll be looking back in years to come on this and be like, oh man, that was a really awesome time in Destiny, in my life, just in general. So
I think we also have a piece of original art that we're going to be doing, I don't know, giveaway, a raffle with at some point in time. Like,
yeah,
we were provided with the original copies of the designs that Irresolute did on actual like wood, as opposed to like the poster designs that they ended up being, like the digital ones. We have the actual paintings. You're keeping the last word, and I'm keeping Bastion. But I think we're gonna do something special with the Monarch, and maybe give it to a patron or something.
Yeah, I could not part with the last word. It's right now it's sitting in a box in my office. Actually, all three of them are still in there, packed very carefully. And I think we will have one to give away at a future date. So more on that possibly in the new year.
Yeah. Well, something to ring in 2022, but man, you were right. This has been a long little bit of introductory stuff. We still have to thank the patrons and the sponsors, don't we? I don't think we've even talked about either of them.
We do. So without further ado, let's go ahead and say some thank yous. So new patrons, who I was all set to thank 10 minutes ago, getting your thank yous now. Thank you to the following guardians for joining us, for helping to make all this possible. Thank you, Kellen. Thank you, Mederic. Thank you, Queen Wrath Chris. Thank you, Eggs in Bed. Thank you, Moonlight. Thank you, Keetrick. Thank you, MCA. And thank you, KSimE21. We appreciate all of you. Incredibly generous. And we hope that we can continue to deliver the value that you see in the show in future episodes. We will certainly do our best. Speaking of guardians that we like to say thank you to, we've got another 9 guardians that, well, I mentioned them earlier. We call them the 9. These are our sponsors. They give to the podcast in an incredibly generous way, help to support things like the microphones that you are listening to us on and the various paraphernalia that goes along with those, boom arms and cables and pop filters and all that jazz. So big, big thank you to the sponsors. They are Starscream S13, Binary Wolf, A Solitary Bird, Askian Monk, Deacon, The Shazzle, Zen SoCal, Conquer King 420, and Black Hammer Tech. Okay. Well, that is a lot of thank yous. That is a lot of patron talk. I'm going to throw it over to you. I think we have at least one review this week.
We have 4 reviews this week. The horrifying thing is that we're at 20 minutes and we're not even done with the housekeeping. People are going to be very upset. But like I said, timestamp in the description. Don't worry about it.
Yep.
So we have multiple reviews this week. We have a first one coming in from 2Chainz, but I got a few on, which actually he also left a very fantastic review for Beneath Twin Suns. So we do appreciate that on the other feed. But he said massive breakdowns, more like massive dubs, 5 stars. I swear on the 9, this is the best podcast I've ever heard. From the pump up intro tune to the very last second, all these boys do is recommend fire. It's been straight PvP genius in the form of cold hard stats. One day I'll get you boys through some GMs or raids and can bless you with the PvE loot. Since you've blessed me so much with the PvP knowledge, this is the way. Was a fantastic review. Thank you so much, 2Chainz. I appreciate it. You will be hard pressed to get me into those to that in-game PvE content, but one day maybe we'll do it.
Yeah, you know, I always tell people I'm game, but I'm also underleveled. It's that power grind, I'm just too lazy to do it. I go and I play what I want to play, and then I look back and I'm like, boy, that was, if I wanted to max out, that was a waste of time. But is what it is.
I'm max level, but it doesn't help when you're going into a GM, because max level still isn't even always enough, unfortunately. But next up, this is from Saint Caber. It says, excellent Destiny podcast, 5 stars. Mercles and Kit give you the tools to truly understand what perk stats matter. Don't let people tell you what the perfect role is. Decide for yourself. They'll help you understand every piece of it so you can find what truly works best for you. My friends thought I was some sort of stat wizard when I first started sharing info from the show. Listen to Massive Breakdowns. Become the stat wizard in your fire team.
Love it.
This is actually, it's been a while since we've heard a review like this, but this used to be a very common theme, like early on in the show, where people would be like, yeah, my clan or my Discord thinks I'm like the person who knows everything about weapons. But really, I just like read your shit on Reddit or I listen to the show and I just repeat it back to them. So it's nice to see that even in Destiny's Twilight years, I guess it's not really the Twilight years, the golden years. How about that?
There you go.
Even in Destiny's golden years, that's still going strong.
This is the new middle age for Destiny. It's made it through its midlife crisis, I think. It's coming out the other side.
It bought a red Corvette, but you know, it's okay. It stayed with its wife, so it's fine.
Yeah. It's going to pay that red Corvette off, dang it.
Next one is from Telesto. Massive Breakdowns podcast, 5 stars. I've recently started listening to this podcast, and as a player who's only played for about a year, this podcast has been my go-to for understanding how to improve at the game. Mercules and Kit combine valuable information and advice with fun and entertaining topics to create a wonderful podcast. P.S. Since listening to this podcast by Katie has doubled with the help you guys bring. Smiley face. Thank you very much, Telesto. I'm very happy to hear that your Katie has doubled. I would not chalk that up entirely to us. I would assume it's just because you've played a little bit more over the last year. But I'm very, very happy to hear that you have been improving along with the advice that we've given you.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Full credit to you for the hard work that you put in to double your KD. That is not something that happens just by listening. That means you listen, you go out, you observe, you understand, you apply. And it's a lot of work that you're doing. I feel like we're getting credit for something that we maybe just like encouraged you to do.
You know, I'll take some of the credit.
Yeah.
You know, I think I took a bit of it. All right.
We're good cheerleaders.
The last one for this week is a must for Destiny PvP, 5 stars. This is from Shadow Strike. He says, if you love Destiny PvP, this is the perfect show for you. I've learned so much from the weapons breakdowns and sandbox discussion that I would never have considered. Merc and Kit have great chemistry and know the game inside and out. Thank you very much, Shadow Strike. We appreciate that review. That was a fantastic week of reviews, top to bottom, 4 of them, a lot of reviews, a lot of new patrons. This has just been a banger of a week for housekeeping, despite the fact that it's been an extremely tame week, not even a relatively tame week, an extremely tame week for Destiny itself.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. True on both points. But you know, sometimes that's just how things go. Things right now are definitely fire in the massive breakdowns world. And with that, coming mostly from the community support that we're getting just all year long, and right now kind of closing the year out with some great support, it really felt like a great time to answer some listener questions. So I think what we need to do here is just put that timestamp in the description in giant bold letters. Hope that people see it. And let's try to dive in to some of these questions before we get to the half hour mark in the show.
Alrighty, guys. Then let's start with the first question. This one is from Lovelace. And they say, what do you think the ideal way to retune 360 RPM high-impact auto rifles is to make them more distinct and feel strong in PvP? Vic in the Discord server suggested a hypothetical tuning that drops their fire rate and gives them more damage. I found that one particularly interesting myself. So you guys know how I feel about balancing weapons. I have almost always felt that the simplest change is generally the best. I don't like shifting archetypes around outside of their base. Now, I do like the idea of dropping rate of fire and increasing damage because I'm a huge fan of the Crusher Mello with Adagio. I think it's a very fun, interesting, unique weapon. I don't know that I would want to play it all the time. When you drop that fire rate and you increase damage, to me, it ends up feeling exactly like a rapid fire scout rifle. What I would like to do is I think back in my head to when was the time in Destiny's history when high impact auto rifles were the best. And the answer is early vanilla D1, particularly Soros regime. The only thing that I would do, honestly, to make them better is I would up the stability just a teeny tiny bit to make them a little bit easier to manage. And I would jack that range like way out. I would put high impact auto rifles competing with like mid range pulse rifles legitimately. And it's probably a very unpopular decision, but like, if you were to give me full control over the Destiny sandbox, I shit you not, every primary weapon that is not like an SMG or a sidearm would be competitive out to probably like 30 to 35 meters. Like they would all function out to that distance. The reason being is because a vast majority of engagements take place in that distance. And personally, I am of the belief that auto rifle, hand cannon, pulse rifle, scout rifle, they should all be effective within that distance. I was not a fan of them killing the range of auto rifles and fast rate of fire pulse rifles to like keep them out of that distance. And so part of me would just walk all of them like right back into it. But high impact auto rifles, especially, I would like jack their range way up and their stability up a little bit. I think that'd probably be all it needs. Cause I mean, you look at Vex Mythic class, and granted it has shit tons of aim assist, but the thing's a chainsaw, and I tell you that 30 extra RPM is not really doing that much.
So along those lines, I think what I would probably do is just bump their base zoom up. And the reason I would go after zoom is sort of threefold. First, it pushes the range out, like you said. And I think that in order for them to stand out, they need to lean harder into that because they just don't have a meaningful enough range advantage as is to make them worthwhile over other auto rifles 9 times out of 10. Or just over a different, better weapon, for that matter. Two, it does constrain the recoil, which is a big problem that a lot of them have in terms of making them feasible to use at those ranges. And three, by pushing the zoom out, you push them into being a sort of mid to longer range weapon and make them less effective at short distances by making them more unwieldy. So I like to see weapons kind of in specific engagement zones that are fairly clearly defined. And these ones, I feel like they're just a little bit too close to the existing auto rifles, and they don't have enough range to compete in the way that they should against, you know, some of the other high impact weapons that have longer effective ranges. So I would target the zoom, maybe, you know, even just like 0.2, just push it up to like 1.8 kind of as the baseline. I think a lot of them are at 1.6 right now, if I recall.
Yeah. Crusher and Mela for sure is at 1.6. That's really the only one that like exists in any functional form
right
at this current point in time. Yeah. 1.6 is low, like low for a primary too. We were just talking, I think last episode, about Legal Action sitting at 2.2.
So a lot of people will perhaps remember False Promises came out and felt just noticeably significantly better than a lot of the other high impacts, and it had 2.0 zoom. Yeah. So maybe I would push them all up to 2.0, because False Promises wasn't broken by any means, but it was playable. Yeah, I think that would be a good baseline. Maybe an outlier.
2.0 would be great.
An outlier from the raid at like 2.2 or 2.4 or something crazy. Just to really like push the range, but then also make it impossible to use it like under 25 meters.
Well, 2.0 is great because it's 75 base range. It takes the ADS damage fall off distance out to 35 meters, which in my opinion is like right around where they probably would need to be. So I'd be happy to see something like that. And you're right. It does hit all the goals that I want, where I would increase a range, slight increase in stability, makes them more unwieldy close up, which is good because they really should be kind of unwieldy close up. That's a great call. I like that idea.
Well, thank you.
Question number two, the person, to my knowledge, did not leave their name associated with the question. Or maybe they did, and I just copy and pasted wrong. In which case, I apologize. But they said, do you think scout rifle body hit damage could be brought up slightly to help raise the ease of use, but not necessarily decrease the TTK? I 100% believe that. I think I've said that before, like gone on record, as like scout rifles, especially 150 RPM scout rifles, 100% need their body shot damage taken up. Not just in PvP, but in PvE too. Like they do shit damage for body shots, and it makes them so wildly unforgiving that they basically see no use at all.
It's true. Yeah, it's absolutely true. I think one of two things needs to happen to scout rifles. They either need their body shot damage increased across the board, pretty much, or they need to do considerably more precision damage so that they actually reward you for landing those crits. Increasing the precision damage, of course, increases the time to kill, and that's probably something Bungie does not want to do. So, yeah, body damage for sure makes sense.
I mean, you gotta look at it like this. Their body shot TTK is 2 seconds.
Yeah.
That is pretty much the worst in the game for body shot TTK.
It's very bad.
You could just jump it up by like 2 points and bring it down to 1.60 seconds. And that's still not great for a body shot TTK, but it's way better than 2.0 seconds. Like 2.0 seconds is a holdover. It is one of the few holdovers left from the original D2 vanilla TTKs. Like it's one of the few that is still in its same place, whereas everything else has moved up past it.
Yeah. Yeah, the only other way that you could like quote unquote fix that abysmal body shot time to kill is by giving them all a bunch more aim assist. And I'm not sure that that's the answer that we really want in the game either. So
yeah, sometimes the simplest answer, most times in my opinion, the simplest answer is the best.
Yep.
And I think increasing the body shot TTK is the one that works. You know, I'm not a fan of giving more aim assist to any precision weapons in this game.
Absolutely. All right.
Question three, with Christmas approaching and presents on the mind, what are some of your wish list items for the upcoming weapon crafting system, even if you don't think they'll reasonably happen?
Ooh.
This is from August. I wrote an entire article
August
about
the
this
player, not like, the month.
There you go. I wrote an entire article about this, but like my absolute and total dream would be you get a weapon frame as you level the frame up, it opens up more perk slots, and basically every perk is a mod. You can slot a barrel into it, or you can slot a scope into it. You can slot a grip into it. You can slot a stock into it. And then the last 2 to 3, you know, slots that you earn are trait slots. You know, one of them could be trait 1, one of them is trait 2, and the third one is like a masterwork, or like where the actual mod would be. Like, that is my actual dream for weapon crafting, is that you acquire a frame, you level the frame up, it provides you with more options, all perks become mods. I think the acquire a frame thing, honest to God, like the way they've talked about crafting, I don't think that's going to happen at all. I don't think it's going to be anything close to that. I think it's going to be like, oh, you find the parts of the gun and you go here and you go here, and like when you're done, you get a gun and it's just a random roll. But like you can craft a weapon as many times as you want. Like I think it's going to be something like that, which, you know, I don't know why I'm cynical about the introduction of weapon crafting, but just to me, I'm not optimistic.
You're very cynical. That doesn't sound like crafting at all. No, my wish list, I think, would include not having to do bounties for it. I haven't talked about my feelings about bounties in some time, but boy, there are a lot of bounties.
You love them. They're your favorite. You wish that you could just have a bounty simulator where the only thing you did was pick up bounties and go and complete them. And
I have Bounty Simulator on my phone. It's called the Destiny app, except I don't get to complete them.
So. You get to pick them up. That's half the joy.
I just picked them up. Yeah, that's something like that. Yeah, so not having to do bounties, honestly, is at the top of my wish list. And then I would say I would very much like to see it work. I'm assuming we're going to get a specific set of craftable weapons to begin with. I would like to see the system work by allowing us to unlock perks for like a specific type of weapon. So you can unlock Rampage for auto rifles, for example, and then you can craft an auto rifle and guarantee that it will have Rampage. You know, so I'd like to see it kind of go down that path, and perhaps at the pinnacle, you can literally pick from the perks that you've unlocked, exactly the role that you want. That would be my dream. Not having to rely on luck, but to actually, through hard work and time investment, have the option to just get a gun that I actually want. It feels like a big ask for Destiny, but I think it's not outside the realm of possibility, because they have talked so much about how important build crafting is to them as a kind of a tenet of where Destiny 2 is going. And it doesn't make sense to say we're leaning fully into build crafting, but you have to rely on RNG to get to the build you want. That doesn't make sense. Those two things don't fit. So anyway, that's where I'm at with it.
I think that would be a huge shift for them. I'm not saying it won't happen. I hope that it would. I have long said that a more deterministic way to build the gun that you want to take into your loadout is good for the game in the long term. But Destiny as a whole has always seemed to be skittish about making it too easy for players to get the gun they want. I feel like they think a lot of the replayability comes from getting the gun, whereas my thing has been like my replayability comes from playing with the gun that I want to use.
Yeah.
And I'm sure that there's a split in the community where it's like the only reason someone is running Vault of Glass for the 78th time is because they don't have Vault Vex Mythic Glass, right? And I understand that, but I still think that's a super unhealthy way to motivate players to play.
I agree. So. Yeah, I don't think people necessarily should run Vault of Glass 78 times unless they personally want to do it for fun.
Right. If you're a Sherpa and you're taking people through it, or you're trying to get triumphs, or you're trying to get a speed run or something like that, then by all means, run it as many times as you want. But like, it is a struggle to get the average Destiny player to run a raid once. Like, asking players to run a raid even 10 times is kind of fucking crazy when you think about it. Yeah. Like, that's the upper limit of what I really think anybody should realistically be asked to run a raid. Like, to me, one time is a lot for a majority of players. Three times is pretty much unheard of for a majority of players. That's just once on each character. And for probably 90% of players, that doesn't happen. Asking players to do it three times on each character seems insurmountable for a large portion of players.
Yeah, I agree. You know, and I think a lot of times the loudest voices in the community are not the main audience in terms of like the majority of people who play Destiny. And so sometimes the audience fools itself, or sometimes the loudest voices fool themselves into thinking that they are the main audience, because they're loud and they the only other people they hear are each other. You know, maybe they've got, they spend a lot of time on social media interacting with other people who spend a lot of time on social media. And so there becomes this sort of echo chamber where you think everyone feels a certain way, but in fact, nobody runs raids. And that's fine, right? The raids are there for the people that want them, and for everybody else, there is patrol. And I can tell you, I have played a lot more hours of patrol than I have of raids.
I saw something that was like horrifying, I don't know, a while back, and it was like someone showed me my raid report because they were mocking me because I didn't run enough raids. And I've done like, I don't know, like 30 or 40 raid clears and like all of D2. Like, I've done every raid once. I've done some raids, like particularly Deepstone Crypt. I've done probably closer to like 10 times. I've done Eater Worlds a lot. But I've done every raid for the most part multiple times. And they were like telling me that like I didn't know what I was talking about. And some argument because they were like, you don't even raid. And I was like, looking at the stats, I was like, I'm in like the top 1% for raid completions compared to the players as a whole. And like,
yeah,
it's like you have people who've run raids 200 times or something like that. And it's like, you're one in 10,000 or one in 100,000. Like, that's not normal. That's not normal behavior from the player base as a whole. Like, it is such a struggle to get an average player to run even just once.
It's not average behavior, right? It's an extreme outlier. And that's something that I think is maybe important for everyone to keep in mind sometimes, is that just because something is normal from your point of view doesn't necessarily mean that it's average, or in the sense that it's possible a lot of other people don't view it as normal. And so those of us who do maybe have a greater emotional investment in the game, easy to lose sight of that at times. I think we try to keep fairly level heads on this podcast in terms of recognizing that we aren't necessarily always in the majority in terms of players.
In fact, I'm very rarely in the majority in terms of players, it would seem.
Hence the Bastion art. There we go. So, Let's move on to the next question. Speaking of weapons that we have art of, now that it has an ornament, and a dang fine looking one at that, do you think it's time that LeMonarch gets a catalyst? And if so, what do you think would be a good addition to it without making it totally OP and broken? I feel like we discussed this before, but let's just
with Chris Proctor on the show.
That's right. That's when it was.
Because we asked him what he was thinking, and he was like, well, what do you guys think? And I said, you know, my biggest fear is like, you cannot do anything that makes the gun much stronger than it is right now in PvP. You can make it stronger in PvE and it'd be a really fun weapon. My thought was that you could make the poison stack, like how Outbreak Outbreak Perfected does.
Mm.
And I thought that that would be a pretty fun thing for PvE. It wouldn't really hurt it for PvP that much. Or you could give it something like really super basic, like Archer's Tempo for PvP. Or Opening Shot, right? Something that the other player who's getting hit by it isn't really going to know that it's making a difference, but it makes the gun feel better. Or you could like increase the stability, because that would help, as we learned on that show, actually, stability helps how long you can hold the perfect draw for.
Yeah.
So that would help non-Oathkeepers players to use it.
Yeah.
Which I think right now it's at its strongest when it's used with Oathkeepers. People would be like, no, but you should use it with Shinobu's Vow and Skip Grenades. I understand, but the reason I use Oathkeepers is not so I can hit the perfect shots. It's so I can use it like a sniper rifle instead of using it like an Linear Fusion.
Right.
So that's why I use it. So whatever it is that's done, like it's a really, really fine line to tread, because the second it becomes OP, oh my God, it's going to be the worst thing ever.
You know what they should do is they should just give it perfect stability. Just max it out. And that way everyone can hold that perfect draw for at least a decent amount of time. It won't be Oathkeepers.
Well, no, we don't want to give Warlocks and Titans too much, right? They're already the easiest subclasses to play. Those poor hunters barely have anything in PvP.
True, especially now. They've had their one fun thing.
Shadow Dive is gone.
Taken away.
I'm ruined. I have nothing left.
The only thing the hunters have now is the Monarch. It's a hard life, but struggle on with our jumps.
All right, number five.
Yeah. I'd love to hear what world loot rolls have dropped for you that took you by surprise, or what world loot you're keeping an eye out for.
Well, not a lot of the world loot stuff took me by surprise. Like, I think I did a pretty good job of digging into it while I was, you know, when the season was first spinning up and when the changes were first happening. Like, I was kind of surprised how good Cartesian Coordinate ended up being, but that wasn't because the gun itself surprised me. It was because the changes to the archetype really surprised me and how effective they ended up being. What actually surprised me was, I think, Contingency Plan, because I was like grinding. This is, geez, what was the season where we had the Sundial and there was a Black Scorpion Scout Rifle that I was like grinding the entire season to get like this perfect Black Scorpion roll, which was a rapid fire. I mean, it's a Vice rapid fire scout rifle.
Right.
And I was like grinding the entire season. I literally got it in like the last week of the season, and then it got sunset within like two seasons after that. And then Contingency Plan just like out of nowhere fell straight into my lap with an even better roll. And I was like, holy shit. Contingency Plan just came out of nowhere and just dumped this like perfect kill clip roll, kill clip steady rounds right into my lap. And I was like, holy shit, this thing's a monster. And then obviously Cool Guy like made his video about it and it like blew up all over the place. And now I see a handful of them, which isn't too bad. So that's probably the only one that like kind of caught me by surprise. And I was just surprised that I was able to so easily get a better roll than the Black Scorpion, which I've been grinding for literally months to try to get one.
So I would say probably the one that impressed me the most. Well, so there'd be two. I would give credit to Cartesian Coordinate for impressing. That's kind of more rapid fire fusions in general, just being better than I expected them to be. But the other one that sort of, I guess that I wasn't really looking for was Stars and Shadow. I have a pretty decent messenger role now, but I don't have a great one.
You mean Legal Action? Stars and Shadow is a Crucible pulse rifle. Legal Action is the...
Oh, yeah. Is it? Oh, Legal Action. I guess I forgot where Stars and Shadow came from. So then in that case, now I don't have a good Legal Action, so I got nothing. Cartesian Coordinate it is.
Cartesian Coordinate was a good answer. Number six, with weapon tiering list, either between weapon subtypes or between weapons in the same subtype, how much of the ranking is purely down to the raw numbers and how much is down to usage in the wild as a proxy measure of ease of use and effectiveness, do you think? Can you tell objectively if a weapon is going to be S tier before you even pick it up? Or does the community ultimately decide that subjectively through usage and kill statistics? Well, the community ultimately decides things, you know, subjectively, because that's how the community works. That's why you constantly see posts on YouTube that are like, this is going to be the new meta, or this gun is the most dominant gun ever. And it's just a really good YouTuber destroying with a gun. And then the usage upticks immediately following it because people are just like, oh, I'm going to try this gun out. And that's why there could technically be a gun that is better than it, but nobody has played with it yet. And people are all using a gun that's worse just because someone else used it. So the community decides things almost entirely subjectively based off what feels best or what is the most popular. I do not think, do that. Obviously, we play with guns, but like everything in this game is defined by numbers to a certain extent. Like there is a reason for everything in this game. How a gun feels is a lot based on zoom and recoil direction and aim assist and stability and range. And if you compare two guns in the same archetype, you can look at every single stat that they have, and you can pretty much know, as long as you have played with that archetype enough, you can pretty much know exactly how that gun's going to play. Now, yeah. The perks are a bit of a wild card, but as far as the performance of the weapon itself, if you take the perks out of the equation, like it all comes down to numbers.
Yeah, it's been pretty rare over the years that we've been doing this, I think, that I've been surprised by how a gun feels, unless I have, say, failed to check what the zoom level was in advance. And then sometimes I'm like, oh, this has a really narrow field of vision, or, oh, this is really stable and has a lot of range, just depending on how it plays out. But by and large, yeah, you know, I've spent a lot of time with every single archetype, every type of weapon, and I still mix it up regularly. You know, I have some go-to loadouts, but I try to always spend time playing off of that, keep myself flexible, and to stay open to the possibility that I'm missing something. And so generally I'm not surprised. And I think maybe that's where, you know, maybe that's why we kind of both arrived at looking at perks as something that we needed to spend time digging through many, many moons ago, and why we're still doing it. Because those are the real wild cards, like you said. It's certainly, you know, like a lot of them, mags and barrels and sights and stuff, we have pretty much on lockdown now as far as what they're going to do the gun. But those trade slots can completely change it.
Yeah. Now, I will say that the sight picture of a weapon is like one thing that cannot be determined with raw numbers. Like it's not a stat, it's an artistic choice a lot of times, the weapon designer. And like that is one thing that can totally wreck a gun. If you don't like the sight picture that it presents to you, it really doesn't matter what the stats are. I personally am one of the people who, as long as the reticle doesn't throw me off, like the sight picture itself very rarely bothers me. The reticle itself can kind of bother me, but the sight picture almost never bothers me. Like I use bygones all the time, which you felt had a really constrained sight picture. You didn't like it. I loved it. It didn't really bother me.
So I'm kind of weird that way. I definitely have a problem with sight pictures that are too constrained. But muzzle flash almost never bothers me. And a lot of people just hate like that flare on the bottom of their screen, just hate it. Feel like it blinds them, makes it impossible to see what they're shooting. And I'm just like, well, if I can't see it, then it's behind the muzzle flare, which means I'm hitting it. I don't know. It's just one of those things where, you know, your mind works one way or the other way, or some mysterious third way. And some guns are just going to bug you, and some won't. So that is definitely, that's the je ne sais quoi.
Someone was talking about this with Crimson recently, where Crimson on like a high field of view entirely blocks the reticle when you shoot. You literally can't see the reticle at all when you're shooting Crimson on a high field of view, which makes it very, very difficult to use Crimson on a high field of view, unless you disregard the reticle and you just know where the gun is shooting and you kind of just like ignore it, right? Which is hard to do. There's stuff like that is subjective when you're playing gun. Like there's no amount of stats that's going to tell you that Crimson on a high field of view, the reticle is going to be blocked by the recoil. So there is, like, I guess what I should say is this, like, we use stats to determine stuff preemptively, and then we go in and we use the stuff to see how it actually goes. But those things that we just kind of mentioned are like very special, weird one-offs where there's like a custom scope built for the gun, or it's an exotic that is entirely unique. And like those things are kind of hard to compare against anything else. It's like, what are you going to compare Crimson against? There is no Crimson archetype. There is no other pulse rifle or hand-to-hand archetype. So like Crimson isn't a gun that you could do a good job just being like, this gun's statistics say it does this. Like, it's unique. It's entirely unique. But when you have, say, for example, two 600 RPM auto rifles, you can put those two guns side by side and look at their stats. And if one of them has better recoil direction and better range, like, you know how that gun is going to feel because it's a 600 RPM auto rifle. Like, all 600 RPM auto rifles are built in the same chassis under the hood. They may have a different coat of paint on the top of them, but the stats affect the guns the same way.
Yeah.
So to me, it's very, very important to objectively look at the stats and not get too wrapped up in the subjective part of it right off the bat, because that's how you end up using like a really shitty gun, of which anybody who actually plays with the archetype knows that there's a better version of that gun out there. But you're playing with it because some YouTuber just dropped a 50 kill, you know, streak using it and posted on YouTube. And now popularity is through the roof for a weekend.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think the answer to that question is mostly you can tell objectively if a weapon is going to be a top tier weapon just by looking at it. But there is definitely a subjective layer to it. And then there's just sort of like crowdthink going on as well that sways what actually gets used, regardless of the objective facts. But overall, objective facts tend to win out long term. So, there we go. Question number 7. Iron Banner is my jam. I've heard it may get reward focusing eventually, though there's no mention of this in a TWAB yet. What do you think Iron Banner focusing might look like? Maybe I'll finally get my multi-mock God roll, dynamic sway, iron reach. I'm not that familiar with Trials loot focusing, but I hear it's legendary shard intensive. Fair.
Yeah, I'm actually not the biggest fan of Trials loot focusing. I think it's a better alternative than it was before, but I kind of stay away from it for the most part, just because it is so incredibly expensive, which I think was their... that's what they wanted. They didn't want people just burning through it every single weekend. So it is really expensive. Honestly, I've said this before, I just take the Umbral system that we already have from the seasonal activity and just give it to Trials and give it to Iron Banner. Like, bring back every single weapon we've ever had and every single armor piece we've ever had for Iron Banner and Trials. Throw them into an Umbral system and just give an Umbral system complete with like even those little challenge things that you have to rank up that make stuff better for you. Like, that exact system that you have, take it out of the seasonal activity, which no one really likes doing, and put it into Crucible, put it into Trials, put it into Iron Banner, where people actually do want to play. You could literally copy and paste that shit and just change the little challenges to be, you know, based on the playlist.
Yeah.
And I would play the shit out of it. I think that's the only thing it needs.
Give people like a full year, max out all those systems, and then refresh.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, you can keep adding loot throughout, but in terms of like unlocking stuff, yeah. Just leave it in there, so it's once you've got it unlocked, it's unlocked. Then I think that would be amazing. Completely change the game for the better. That said, what I think will happen with Iron Banner is that they will probably go the Trials system. Unfortunately.
All right. Last question. Favorite ever TV show movie of all time? Totally departing from the train of Destiny questions here. Favorite movie of all time, I think for me, has got to be the Dark Knight, probably would be my favorite movie of all time. I think that was the first movie that I like walked out of the theater and I was like, holy shit. That blew my mind when I saw it. I think I went back and saw it like 3 or 4 more times in theaters, and still to this day, when I watch it, I'm consistently impressed by how good that movie is. I think it set the stage for a lot of what we appreciate today in terms of superhero movies. So I think that's got to be my favorite movie by far.
Okay. That's a good choice. That's a good choice. I think it's tough for me because I'm not really one to rewatch movies a lot. So I don't really, like, I might have a favorite for a specific genre or a specific time of year. You know, like, I always try to watch It's a Wonderful Life every Christmas because it gives me nostalgia watching it with my dad growing up. But I wouldn't say it's my favorite movie of all time. I'm going to pick The Matrix for reasons similar to why you picked The Dark Knight. The Matrix was the first movie that I ever purchased. I bought it on VHS, and wow, like, it just changed my life. Completely rewrote what I thought could happen in a movie. And yeah, I feel like it, you know, speaking of setting the groundwork for the future of special effects and action cinematography, that was a game changer. I'm you know, the sequels were okay. but the original, man.
What about your favorite ever TV show?
Okay. So that's also a difficult choice for similar reasons. I mean, the TV show that I have rewatched the most is probably Psych. It's just like my go-to chill out at the end of the night. I don't feel like watching something that I have to think about. Yeah. That's probably it.
For me, this is a hard question because I feel like for you answering the movie question, there's so many genres. Like, I want to say Scrubs.
There are.
Like, Scrubs is one of my favorite TV shows of all time. I love Scrubs, but I've only watched it all the way through twice. Because it's actually, like, kind of sad. And, like, even though it's a comedy, like, there's certain episodes that, like, hit really hard in the feels. Star Trek The Next Generation, I've watched the entire series through three times, and, like, I'm partway through a fourth watching. Futurama, like, I've watched Futurama literally an untold number of times because I used to use it to, like, fall asleep to. Like, I would play Futurama in the background and just, like, fall asleep to it. Yeah. I absolutely love the first four seasons of Archer. I think the first four seasons of Archer are some of the funniest TV I've ever seen in my entire life. So it's really hard to choose, like, a favorite out of all. Fuck, I love the Clone Wars and Star Wars Rebels. Like, especially after having rewatched them just recently. Like,
yeah,
those two shows are great shows. Legitimately great shows. And I don't say that lightly. So it's hard.
I was going to throw The Mandalorian in. I think... Yeah. The trouble is, though, it's part of it is because I'm rewatching it right now. But I don't rewatch a lot of TV shows. A lot of times I watch it straight through once, and that's it. And maybe I loved it, but I'm not going to rewatch it. I'm always looking for something new. So,
you know, and you just pointed out to me earlier, we took a short break as I was zoning out because I'm exhausted, tired, having gotten back from a 4-day work trip. But, we totally forgot what we promised you guys at the beginning that we're going to talk about.
We did.
Cartesian coordinate. So if you listened through to the end of this episode, congratulations. I'm assuming you listened through the end of the last episode and you took umbrage with my recommended PvE god roll of Swashbuckler Grave Robber for Cartesian coordinate. I was hallucinating at that point in time as I was also very exhausted. And I just threw out the first thing that came to my mind, but I have been told that, in fact, that was not. So we're gonna go through, we're going to say... Here's the PvE god roll for Cartesian coordinate. I'm going to say red dot micro for the scope. I'm going to say enhanced battery for that +1 in the magazine, so it brings it up to 8. I'm going to say slideways and vorpal weapon. I know some people are going to be like, in my opinion, stability and accuracy doesn't really do shit in PvE. So I would much rather just go with slideways, because with slideways... At least there's the potential of me being able to slide around and put rounds back in my magazine while, you know, without having to necessarily reload, which I feel like makes it a lot better for taking out red bar. So yeah, red dot micro, enhanced battery for the plus one magazine, slideways, vorpal weapon.
I can't argue with that. Yeah, I guess I wasn't really thinking through how good rapid fires are in PvE right now. And I sort of assumed that if you were looking for a boss damage tool, that you would just grab Vorpal on your own. But it does bear saying. We should be saying those things. We shouldn't just be making assumptions. That was so yeah, I hold myself responsible for not speaking up there. There we go.
There. You guys happy? You happy now? You gave me so much shit in the Discord that I had to revisit Cartesian coordinate at the end, the PvE role at the end of the listener Q&A. So that is it for this episode, guys. I'm sorry it was a little bit of a short one and we just rolled with listener QAs, but I am freaking struggling right now. And I promise you next week we'll come back with a much better episode. We actually had a super good idea for this episode, but like I just couldn't put the show notes together in time. I shit you not, like I flew back in from DC earlier this morning, having been on a 4-day work trip where I traveled for 25 hours in 4 days, and like I'm just absolutely beat right now. So thank you for all the questions. We appreciate it. Thank you for tuning in. And we'll see you next week for episode 240.
Peace.
Bye.